Hey, Justin, you want to watch a movie?
Yeah, sure. What you got?
What do you think about,
No, I saw it last week.
Oh, what about,
Not again.
Oh. How about this?
Wait. You want me to watch what?
So what did you think of The Secret Life of Walter Mitty?
It was okay at times.
Okay. I'll sit with that for a minute, because this is one of my favorite Danny Kaye movies. So,
all right. Well,
but it is not without its critiques.
Yes. So let's discuss it first, and then we'll discuss it.
Right. So, Secret Life of Walter Mitty, based on the James Thurber short story, but really only keeping the pakada pakada and the daydreaming. The story follows Walter Mitty, a milquetoast to the nth degree. He is henpecked and harassed by practically everyone in his life, from his mother to his boss to his fiance to his fiance's mother and his fiance's dog, even his fiance's other suitor. Yeah. What a life, huh?
Yeah.
But in this life that he lives, the only escape that he has are his daydreams, in which he gets to play the hero. Whether that be as a fighter pilot or a gunslinger or a surgeon or what have you. But into this sad, sad life, Walter steps into an actual adventure. When the woman of his dreams, Rosalind Van Horn,
literally,
uses him to get herself out of a bad situation. And the story goes is that she's working with her uncle to secure some Dutch crown jewels that are hidden from the Nazis from World War II. And the MacGuffin is this little memorandum notebook. You know, that Walter also has a memorandum notebook, but it's to help him remember what to get from the store, from the giant list of things his mother always has him buy. So this leads to Walter leading kind of a double life, you know, because he's having these daydreams, which everyone knows he has these daydreams, and they cause him a fair bit of trouble and embarrassment. But he's caught up in this adventure of this book at the same time that he's trying to be normal and he's failing miserably at it. Because these daydreams are assumed to be the culprit rather than the very real danger that he's facing. So, skipping a whole lot of daydreams and some Danny Kaye song and dance numbers, of which there are more than there should be, eventually, the notebook's found is brought to the uncle, only discovers, gasp, shock, amaze, that the uncle is one of the bad guys. And so, Mitty's drugged and then gaslit into thinking that the girl is just a figment of his imagination, you know, just another daydream. And they go so far as to stage a visit to a psychologist, played by Boris Karloff, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Who suggests certain visions and daydreams to Mitty in the moment with the sole intent of then showing them to Mitty and pretending that nothing has happened. You know, this, you're always the hero. You always see your girl, you know, bound and gagged to a chair needing rescue. And so the next thing you know is that the door opens and you see the girl bound and gagged in a chair. And then the door shuts and Mitty goes to look and it's gone. Or, you know, the Karloff talks about, you know, he had one patient who only ever saw women wearing swimwear. And the very next thing is the nurse coming in wearing swimwear. And it all is then, this is all in your mind, Mr. Mitty. And it seems to convince him to the point of going on with his wedding before finding a trinket that Rosalind had given him. And that proves that she wasn't a dream of any kind, and he rushes back to the fake uncle's house to rescue her, and he does so with the help of the police, and ultimately ends with him finding the courage to stand up to those that had bullied him and marrying the girl of his dreams and getting a new promotion, and life is good and happily ever after, blah, blah, blah. It's a beautiful 1940s mess of a movie. And I'll admit, I love almost all of it. It's about 20 minutes too long. You know, there are parts to it. It's like, I think you're trying to pat. I don't think you're trying to pad the time. I think you're trying to heighten tension and have forgotten that this is a popcorn flick. But so from my perspective, Danny Kaye is in fine form here as both the timid Mitty and the hero Mitty. You know, his daydream self is so boisterously big that it only accentuates his timid real life persona, right?
Yes.
My biggest critique, though, is the musical numbers, which I love Danny Kaye's musical numbers, and they're entertaining, but they don't belong in the story. Even in the daydreams, they seem to exist outside of the timeline. You know, there is a part where his daydream is that he's an RAF pilot during World War II, and the song is about the college music professor that they had. And it's a funny song. It just doesn't fit. But they're there to play to Kaye's strengths. The acting is 1940s chic, which means that everyone's acting like they're still on a stage, which just too big for the movie. With the exception, I would say, of Kaye and Karloff, who seem to have kind of nailed the fine art of film acting by that point.
Yeah.
Being able to be quiet and intimate in those moments. But, so, talk to me about the fine, I guess.
Well, okay. I really enjoyed, and I pretty much agree with everything you said. Danny Kaye is superb in this. I have no issues with him. The daydreaming sequences are where Danny Kaye gets to be Danny Kaye, and it's really fun and enjoyable. And yeah, the one, you know, song about the college professor in the fighter pilot dream didn't quite fit, but again, it was entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest problem with the movie is that it was hard to watch Walter with his mother and fiance and his boss when he was dealing with the saving the damsel and trying to find the pocketbook and all that stuff. That was fine. But dealing with the people in his day-to-day life was very hard to watch because I felt, you're supposed to feel bad for him, but I felt so bad for him that it was painful to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I've not lived a life like that, but I know people who have, who are that kind of henpecked. And it's like, I don't want to watch him go through this. I want to get a sense that he, you know, has this boring life and is not appreciated. I really enjoyed the daydream sequences, and I really enjoyed the escape from Karloff and all of that thing, and, you know, rescuing the damsel at mm-hmm. the end. You know, that was all fine. Or leave everything else as it was, but add a little bit more at the end of his life after standing up to everybody, because we got literally 2 minutes. Oh, well, everything's better now. Well, no, it's not. He's still, you know, what about his mother? You know, there's a lot of things left unresolved.
He gets to kick out about four people from his life between Tubby and the fiancé and the fiancé's mother and the dog.
Yeah.
But he's still going to have his mother right there.
Yeah, which is all, you know, it's great. Get rid of toxic people. But at the same time, there was no resolution to it all. Yeah, he punched Tubby and went mm-hmm. on about his life, but there was still tension hanging in the air, in my opinion. So it really needed to be toned down on that side of things or given a better ending to
either that part needed to be toned down or we needed to tune up the ending.
Yes,
part
exactly.
I can see that. I have felt for a while that the ending of this movie felt rushed. You know, they spent so much time with the tension and the discomfort and sitting in all of that. And then at the very end, I think you're absolutely right. It rushes through and assumes that everything's better now.
Yeah. But that may just be 1940s kind of way things are handled. You know, oh, it's all better now. The end. Like, no, it's not, but...
Yeah, but if we try to do otherwise, we get a Ben Stiller movie.
No, let's not go there.
No, and actually the Ben Stiller movie is even less like the short story than this one.
So I've heard.
And honestly, it's not a bad movie. It's just, it's hard to, if you read the short story by James Thurber, which I recommend, it's a good short story, probably certainly the most famous of James Thurber's short stories. It's much simpler. You can't stretch a short story into 2 hours, you know, any more than you can take an entire season of TV and turn it into one movie, right?
Yeah.
You know, talk to Last Airbender people about that.
Oh, God, yes.
But so in the short story, it's just kind of Walter launching into these daydreams because of what's happening around him. You know, passing by the hospital gives him the daydream of being the surgeon, you know, at the tail end when his wife's, because in the short story, it's his wife that's henpecking him.
Mm-hmm.
Is that appropriate language? I don't know. When his spouse is getting her hair done or whatnot, and he's leaning against the building, smoking a cigarette, he has the daydream of, you know, being in a firing line. You know, there is no resolution. There's no spy thing. There's no greater adventure in the book. And even James Thurber said that it was kind of it was too much. It gave him nightmares.
Wow.
Which, yeah, in 1940s, I guess. Anyway, the spy parts, the rushing around, the most painful parts to me are that the people who are so harassing to him, they never stop to think that he might be telling the truth.
No, they never give him the benefit of the doubt.
That's the part that always kind of stood out to me, is like, I get being a bullied individual. I get that you have all these people who say that they're trying to help you and they're not really. They're just exerting power over you. But then at no time then, when he's having these issues, he crawls into his boss's window from the ledge on the what floor could it, you know, 20th yeah. some odd floor. And his boss never thinks to, you know, to say, why are you out there, and believe the answer. It is not typical behavior for a person.
No.
To come in through a 20th story window.
And even up to that point, it wasn't typical behavior for Walter. Yeah, he daydreamed, right. And he was, you know, a little frazzled.
Absent-minded?
Absent-minded, maybe? Frazzled, as my grandmother would say, a flibbertigibbet.
Oh, that's a good word. We don't use that word often enough.
No, we don't. But at no point had he ever, you know, been out on the ledge of the building. That is a big shift in personality.
That's a pretty big change in... It's a big change, period.
Yes.
That's something that ought to get your attention.
You would think so.
So we have that, and that's certainly a good critique. You know, that I find that to be... That is far more valid than just saying, it's like, I didn't like the boss's mustache.
Which, no, the mustache was great. I had no problem with
mustache
that.
Mustache was fine, yeah. The movie is from like 1946 or 47. I mean, I had these things written down, and then in getting connected, I shut my internet off, or like shut my browser, so I lost all of the tabs I had open.
It was made somewhere between 1940 and 1949.
Yeah. So, and so there are stylistic things about it that are just kind of weird to our modern eyes.
Yes.
Some script things that are weird to our modern sensibilities. I would still say that this is one of those movies that it's not going to hurt to watch. Not really. Especially because of the happy ending. The happy ending might be rushed. It might be a little forced, especially as like, why the heck is Tubby at the uncle's house? You know, the boss went after.
Yeah,
you know, went after him when he ran back to the house, but not the mother, not the future possible mother-in-law, not the fiance, not the dog, not Tubby. It was just supposed to be the boss.
And why is Tubby his best man?
That is an excellent question, and one that I can only suggest is because they wanted to keep the cast small.
Probably.
So, it is a beautiful mess of a movie. And one that, with about 20 minutes worth of editing, and about one more scene worth of falling action, would make it, I think, really enjoyable even to our modern eyes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't regret seeing it. It's not something I'm going to go back and watch on the regular, but I don't regret seeing it. I think with a few more tweaks of either toning something down or ramping something up, it would have made it a little bit more enjoyable.
I can sit with that. That don't bother me.
Yeah.
It's like I was... And you and I have had these conversations off camera and off mic before. It's like... The things that you and I grew up with and watched as kids and as adults has influenced a lot of these things. And so, like, you probably have a whole lot more of the Tom Selleck movies that are in your background, you know, kind of things. And Danny Kaye is in mine.
Yeah.
You know, probably from a similar source, from my mother.
Yeah. Honestly, you I know. Did not see a Danny Kaye movie until... I was in my 30s, and on a whim, I bought White Christmas.
Good choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one.
But I've seen several of his movies since then, and I enjoy Danny Kaye. He's a fine actor.
Danny Kaye is a good actor. He's an excellent song and dance man, and a near-perfect patter song singer.
Yes.
If you ever get a chance, look up the song Tchaikovsky and Other Russians. In which he just gives a lightning fast listing of Russian composers.
All right.
So, but I'm glad you watched it. I'm sorry that it, you know, that it's one of those that you're not going to find the same love that I have, but at the same time, that's life, the universe and everything.
Yeah. And it could have been that maybe, you know, 5 years ago, I would have been a little bit more receptive to it, but nowadays, I'm hyper aware of stuff like that, and it's just it's a little painful to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But again, and I want to stress this to the listeners, I did not regret seeing it. In terms of a classic film, it's a good example. You should watch it. Just know that there's going to be some emotional, painful parts if you're very empathetic towards people. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that works. That works, so... It gets a watch it from me and a watch it conditionally from Justin.
Yes.
It sounds like. And so there you go. Secret Life of Walter Mitty. And that makes it your turn.
Yeah. And yeah, I got something.